Audit Committee on Human Resources, Monday, May 24th, 1993, 3:00 p.m., Hearing Room B.
Good afternoon. The Senate Human Resources Committee will come to order. We have a very ambitious program here this afternoon. We're going to start with the work session on Senate Bills 422, 1087, 2307, and 707. Senate Bill 422.
Okay, Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 422 was before this committee for hearing earlier as an appropriations measure. We took care of the appropriations in another bill. Those appropriations were for the food distribution system, and that was sent to Ways and Means back in March. This bill was designed to overcome a problem pointed out by the Hunger Relief Task Force, that problem being that the recommendations they had for alleviating hunger in Oregon were running into barriers that they couldn't overcome, and they felt there was a need for some kind of an organizational mechanism to work on the recommendations proposed by the Hunger Relief Task Force. This amended version of 422 would provide that mechanism in the form of an interagency coordinating council with Housing and Community Services as the lead agency. This has been worked out with the Hunger Relief Task Force and the department. The department is tied up in another hearing at the moment, but wants to be on record as supporting these amendments.
Who is that?
Housing and Community Services, which would be the lead agency under this version.
Does the bill appropriate any money?
No.
No, it just says that in the measure summary, but that's no longer
true. No longer does. The amended version no longer does.
So if I'm looking at Senate Bill 422, machine engrossed on May 24, 1993, that's today. This one simply calls for interagency coordination with the Housing and Community Development to be lead agency among all of the named parties. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah.
Oh, well, then I'd move this one. This goes
just this one.
Okay.
Senator, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Does the Amendment 1, is that in the Hand and Gross that Senator Grattan just spoke about? Or is that Amendment 2?
That's Amendment 1.
Yeah, but is it Amendment 2, this bill here?
Yes. What this one is this.
Is this. And then this is amending into it.
That's right.
Okay.
What you see in dash 1 is what's found in the Hand and Gross bill.
Okay. Gotcha.
Okay. So Perrin's been.
I move the bill to the floor with the pass recommendation as amended. No, gotcha. First I move the amendments. Thank you.
Yes. Yeah. Move the amendment.
Any objections to the amendments? If not, it is so ordered.
Mr. Chairman, a question, Mr. Merriweather. Now you say that the director is in agreement with and is willing to do this within resources of his budget. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Right. Yeah. I would move the bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Yes. And rescind the referral to.
And request rescinding the referral to Ways
and Means. So Perrin's moves Senate Bill 422 as amended to the floor with the request to rescind the referral to Ways and Means to the floor of the Senate with the due pass recommendation. Discussion? There being none? Roll call?
Senator Cooley?
Aye.
Senator Cairns?
Aye.
Vice Chair Springer?
Aye.
Chair McCoy?
Aye. So ordered. Okay. Senate Bill 1087.
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 1087 was before this committee for hearing recently. And this bill attempts to solve that problem of charging fees for welfare benefit vouchers when they're cashed. We had a very large and well-attended meeting by financial institutions, legal aid, the Department of Human Resources people, Adult and Family Services, Senator Cease's office, and the State Treasury. And out of that meeting emerged the amendments that are before you, which those in attendance agreed would do something to alleviate this problem.
Treasurer sign off on these?
Yes.
Well, good. Good.
Okay.
Well, that being the case, then, the parties are in agreement, and there's no longer any objection to the bill. Is that correct?
That's correct.
What about the state institutions?
Frank Bronner was there, and my understanding is that he has no objections to these. And someone from, was it Interstate, was there throughout the meeting, also was in agreement with these.
Good. Great. That's very good. Yeah.
Well, I would move the amendments to Senate Bill 1087 as expressed in the
Machine Gross
to May 24 version.
Okay, Senator Carroll has moved the amendments of May 24th to Senate Bill 1087. Is there any objection? Being none, it is ordered. Senator Carroll then moves. Senate Bill 1087 as amended to the floor of the Senate with the due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Being none, roll call.
Senator Cooley?
Aye.
Senator Cairns?
Aye.
Vice Chair Springer?
Aye.
Chair McCoy?
Aye. So ordered. Senate Bill 2307.
House Bill.
Okay. House
Bill.
Oh, yeah. We got a ways to go before we get that high.
Yeah, that's right.
We're working on it.
Yeah.
The day may come.
House Bill 2307.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2307 was before us last week, and this was a little bill that attempts to put an end to restrictive covenants and deeds that would, in effect, exclude family adult living homes in residential areas. The issue at the time of the hearing was whether or not to include age as a condition that could not be included in covenants. This bill has been amended to add back in age as one of those conditions that could not be in covenants.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Cairns?
We had an interesting hearing on this bill, and there was a lot of testimony on it. I just think that once you start down the slippery slope of saying, oh, that there is some good reason for including a covenant in property that is a basis for discrimination against a adult foster home is enough to say, well, eventually we'll get there and say it's okay, but we don't want adult foster care that's got a bunch of black people, more maybe Hispanic, or we've got a neighborhood that's got predominantly of one culture, and we don't want people in adult foster care of another culture. I just think it's a slippery slope, and we ought to say you can't discriminate, and that ought to be the name of that tune.
All right.
So I would move the amendments found in the 2307A dated today.
Okay, so Cairns moves the amendments of May 24th as found in House Bill 2307-A. Discussion? Objection? There being none, it is so ordered.
Mr. Chairman, I would move House Bill 2307 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cairns moves House Bill 2307-A as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Roll call.
Senator Cooley?
Aye.
Senator Cairns?
Aye.
Vice Chair Springer?
Aye.
Chair McCoy?
Aye. It's so ordered. Now, Senate Bill 707.
Hey, Mr. Chair.
Ready for takeoff.
Senate Bill 707 is the Canada Single Payer Plan modified to fit the Oregon situation. There are amendments to 707 as it was heard by this committee. You have the amendments in a hand and gross version here. There are supporters of the bill here who are prepared to answer questions about the specific amendments or to take the committee through the amendments. I want to point out a couple of of minor things about these amendments. One is that there's a typographical error right at the beginning of the proposed amendment dealing with dental care. On line 2 of the amendments prepared by the staff dated May 24th, 1933, it reads preventive pediatric parentheses excluding major orthodontic care. After that semicolon, the word but should be inserted. Now, at the end of the amendments, there are new sections 19 and 20 added. The new section 19 deals with civil penalties, and that was prepared as a draft and sent down to LC, which has prepared an alternative version of that, which has come back and which I'll distribute. But basically what we should, what might be the prudent course would be to strike the section 19 that's in those amendments and use the LC version on civil penalties. The last section.
You want to take that?
Yes.
You want to take that one as we go along?
As we go along.
I'd make that motion.
All right. Is there any objection to the deletion of section 19 as in the as proposed in the amendments of 524? There being none, it is so ordered.
And replaced with.
Yes.
Right. Yes,
and replaced with
that. That was my motion.
Okay, and then. Section 20 is a conceptual amendment that deals with giving the board authority to issue bonds for certain capital expenditures. This needs to be done, if done at all, as a conceptual amendment still, because we hadn't resolved the question of the nature of the bonds, whether we knew they were to be revenue bonds, but how to provide the revenue to retire the bonds was another question. Now, what the supporters of the bill propose is a conceptual amendment to give the board authority to issue bonds. It would be revenue bonds and would be retired from the proceeds of the capital expenditure account that's created earlier in this bill. And that would, if we do that, that would have to be done conceptually, and LC could then do the language.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, yeah, so it's occurrence and
my motion.
Okay. Is there any objections to the motion? If not, so ordered.
Okay. Now,
the capital to the capital what?
It's a capital expenditure account.
Expenditure account.
Earlier in the created earlier in the bill. And now, Mr. Chair, the amendments and the engrossed version with the amendments are here for the committee's consideration.
Okay, we want to call on.
Let's go.
You go ahead. All right. Okay. So, the chair's moved.
Mr. Chairman, it's a privilege to move that the Senate Bill 707 as amended. And further amended today.
Do you need to move the amended amendment?
Oh, I'd move the amended amendments to Senate Bill 707.
Is there any objection? So ordered.
And now, Mr. Chairman, my rare privilege to move Senate Bill 707 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation and a request that the subsequent referrals be rescinded.
Okay, Senator Kearns then moves Senate Bill 707 as amended to the floor of the Senate with the due pass recommendation after a request that the subsequent referrals be rescinded.
How can we do that? It's got a 300
by majority vote.
Yeah.
Look at the dollars involved.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cooley raises a legitimate question, and one which we've answered in the past by a long-standing policy, which we, in a small group meeting with the Senate President, pressed extremely hard. And that was, we have taken a policy in the past sessions over the last four or five that I can remember, that a major new policy initiative be voted on in one House or the other in order to test its viability. That is to say, if this were to go out to the floor and find 10 votes, then we would not need to then go on to take up the time of the Ways and Means Committee in trying to develop the financing for it and then go out and find meet that test. But rather, if it went out and found it had 20 votes, that it then go over to the other House and then be subjected to Ways and Means scrutiny. And this would simply be in keeping with that policy. and it would be my intention that an understanding and making the motion that it's that it would, if passed by the Senate, naturally be examined by the Appropriations Committee in the House. Having said that, I'd also say that the amount in question is de minimis in relationship to the overall general fund budget of the state for the next biennium, and is a price that can easily be accounted for within the ending balances of the House, which I think is 200 million now. I think it continues to grow, and the ending balance of the Senate if we agreed to pass it. So it's a pot. We're not setting a new precedent. We're continuing a policy we have in the past. And if it were passed by both houses, we could accommodate that small amount of money. And I think we ought to take a vote count on it. That's what I think we ought to do. Rather than have this thing continue to be bottled up forever, we ought to let it out and see what people think of it. I don't think that anyone should ever be frightened of any idea, or that any idea should be so, shall we say, disturbing that we can't let it out into the sunshine to be voted on.
Okay. The discussion on the motion. There being none, roll call.
Senator Bryant?
No.
Senator Cooley?
No.
Senator Cairns?
Aye.
Vice Chair Springer?
Aye.
Chair McCoy?
Aye. So ordered, Senate Bill 707.
Out of here.
Complete. Now, we go to House Bill 2117.
Okay. Mr. Chair, House Bill 2117 comes in an amended form from the House. This amended form would do the necessary minimal amount of change in Oregon state law, which would allow Oregon to continue to regulate Medicare supplemental health insurance policies. The federal government has passed laws which, if Oregon doesn't comply with them, then the default position is that the federal government may take over the regulation of medical supplemental health insurance.
Okay, we have here Yuba Joyce, Mary Alice Bujort, and Beverly Bettis. Little Hill?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Mary Alice Bjork, Administrator of the Insurance Division, Department of Insurance and Finance. I have with me Louis Little Hales from the division, who can answer any technical questions on the bill. House Bill 2117 proposes amendments to provisions of the Insurance Code relating to Medicare Supplement Insurance in Oregon. Medicare Supplement Insurance fills in the gaps of Medicare coverage. Medicare Supplement Insurance is generally regulated at the state level, but its regulation is overseen by the federal government. Congress established the oversight because of the close relationship of this form of insurance with Medicare. Congress has required that minimum national standards be established for the coverage. In recognition, however, of state regulation of insurance to establish the standards, Congress has first given the National Association of Insurance Commissioners the opportunity to adopt model legislation and rules governing Medicare supplement insurance, and has offered states the option of adopting legislation and rules that are no less stringent. If a state does not adopt the model regulation and rules, the Secretary of Health and Human Services would be required to approve Medicare supplement policies in that state. The actual federal agency is the Health Care Financing Administration in the Department of Health and Human Services. Oregon has obtained and maintained federal approval of its program for regulating Medicare supplement insurance. However, we are not now in full compliance with the federal law. HCFA extended the time for compliance in order to allow Oregon to amend its relevant statutes. We submit House Bill 2117 in order to maintain federal certification of our regulatory program. Regulation at the state level enables Oregon residents to be better served. If a consumer has a problem with coverage, the consumer finds it easier to seek help from the insurance division. House Bill 2117, what the bill does, the major change needed to enable Oregon to conform to the federal requirements is to extend the application of our statutes to all Medicare supplement policies sold to persons eligible for Medicare, regardless of age. Currently, the statutes apply only to such insurance for persons who qualify for Medicare by reason of age. The bill was amended in the House to expand the director's authority, allowing open enrollment in Medicare supplement policies for disabled persons upon their eligibility for Medicare benefits. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Mrs. Board?
Yeah. Fairly easy.
No questions? Mr. Little Hills, would you want to bring up anything?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Louis Little Hills, Insurance Division. Thank you. No, I have nothing to add.
All right. No questions. All right. Thank you very much. Very good explanation. It's all pretty clear.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I am Beverly Bettis, and I'm chair of the Government Relations Committee of the Oregon Chapter of the National MS Society, and I'm here to speak in favor of the bill. HB Set 2117 deals with Medicare supplement insurance policies, most of which are not offered to persons under 65 years of age who are on Medicare due to a disability. There are some HMOs which accept persons on Medicare disability, but that is usually limited geographically. This bill would enable the insurance director to write rules making this product available around the state. Persons with a disability on Medicare would want Medicare supplement insurance for much the same reasons as people over 65. That is, expanded coverage for the deductibles, simplified paperwork, possible prescription coverage, and no balance billing. We also want to remain financially independent for as long as possible. Thank you for your time and attention, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lisa Joyce, and I am a consumer advocate and a coordinator of the state Senior Health Insurance Benefits Assistance Program at the Department of Insurance and Finance. Again, I'm here to support House Bill 2117, and in the spirit of your earlier work session, I will keep my comments brief. Just to provide it for your information, some Some of the companies, a list of the companies who provide Medicare supplement insurance to people who have disabilities. It's a very short list, you can see. The list will become much longer. It'll probably triple if this bill passes. And then I've also included a list of the people who have contacted me, and I've spoken to personally. There's over 100 of them here who have been unable to obtain a Medicare supplement policy because they have a disability. And that's really the only reason. For those reasons and for those people, I urge your passage of House Bill 2117, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
When did the Congress pass the enabling legislation?
It was, Mr. Chair, 1990, OBRA 90.
Tell us again what OBRA stands for.
The Omnibus Budget Reconciliation Act.
Okay.
Otherwise known as the Omnibus.
Okay, are there questions?
We're going to do one of those ourselves this year.
There are no questions. Very clear. Thank you. Okay.
Anybody else?
No one else is
ready to move?
Here. Mm-hmm. Ready?
Well, Mr. Chairman, if you're ready to move, I am too.
Right.
There's no amendments necessary. No. It doesn't appear. The motion was centered on the floor in front of the governor. So.
Okay.
I don't, I'll make the motion then to send House Bill 2117.
Engrossed.
Yeah, just as we find it, before the DuPage recommendation.
As Karen moves House Bill 2117-A to the floor of the Senate with the DuPage recommendation. Discussion? Not. Roll call.
Senator Bryant?
Aye.
Senator Cooley?
Aye.
Senator Cairns?
Aye.
Vice Chair Springer?
Aye.
Chair McCoy?
Aye. So ordered. Move along to House Bill 2150.
Okay. Mr. Chair, House Bill 2150. It's a bill that comes to us as part of the continuing effort to tidy up the Oregon revised statutes as a result of the 1989 merger of the then Senior Services Division with certain functions of government that dealt with the disabled persons. This bill requires Type B area agencies on aging that serve both elderly persons and persons with disabilities to have two advisory committees, one to include elderly persons and another with a majority of persons with disabilities.
Yeah.
Okay. We have Doug Stone and Eugene Oregon.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Doug Stone. I'm manager of the Program Development, Disability Services and Education and Training Units for the Senior and Disabled Services Division. And I would like to present for your consideration House Bill 2150 in an A engrossed version. House Bill 2150 does two major things. It clarifies that a Type B area agency on aging can choose to serve just the elderly or the elderly and disabled. And it requires area agencies on aging that serve both the elderly and the disabled to have a separate advisory council to address issues of concerns of the disabled. In the 89 session, Senate Bill 875 transferred the Medicaid eligibility function for the adult disabled programs from the Adult and Family Services Division to the Senior and Disabled Services Division. Included in that transfer was the option for the Type B area agencies on aging to administer Medicaid services for the elderly or for the elderly and disabled. This option, however, didn't get transferred into the ORS 410 enabling statutes of the division, so that the definition of a Type B area agency in the 410 statutes didn't reflect that option. It was, in fact, put in the session laws, but not into the 410 statute, and this bill corrects that oversight. The bill also adds a requirement that an area agency on aging that chooses to provide services to the disabled must have a separate advisory council to deal with issues concerning the disabled. It also requires the agent to have the term disabled or disability services in their title to communicate that fact, that they do in fact provide services to this population. This is a result of a process, this came out of a recommendation from a process that we have called a negotiated investment strategy process, where we bring together advocates for the seniors, the disabled, the area agencies on aging, provider groups, and the division, and we work out issues that have concerned to all of those groups. During this process, advocates for the disabled felt it was important that area agencies that serve the disabled have an advisory council separate from the one that's required to deal with the issues for the elderly. They felt their issues were often different from those issues affecting the elderly, and they felt this kind of forum would be beneficial. They also felt it was necessary for the area agencies on aging to communicate the fact that they provided services to the disabled by indicating this in the title of the agency. All the representatives of the NIS meeting concurred with this requirement and requested that it be put into statute. And I'll be happy to answer any questions that you might have
concerning the bill. We'll hear it from Mr. Oregon, then we'll have questions here.
Okay. Thank you, Mr.